Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I know you'll be alright, even when times get hard and you feel like you're in the dark. You will see just how beautiful life can be when you soften your heart. You can finally start to live your truth.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Truthiest Life. It's your host, Lisa Haim, and I'm very excited to bring you this episode with a longtime friend of mine, Samantha Abrams. Samantha is the co-founder of the amazing cookie company, Emmy's Organics. You are probably quite familiar with them, and if not, you've probably walked by them in the grocery store a million times and never noticed. But what you might not know is that this special company started in their kitchen and grew into a multi-million dollar company without investors or raising outside money. Samantha is somebody who lives her life from the heart, and how she runs her business is no different. And she really shares in this episode how to keep your values close to you while growing a profiting business that takes care of the people that make it happen. In this episode, she shares about selling a big portion to the largest bakery business in the world and the pleasant surprises that came with it. You do not hear about that a lot. A lot of times when businesses sell, companies really change. But Samantha is here to say that this has been an incredible experience and why she thinks that it is. Moving into her personal life, she also shares about burnout and the physical symptoms and healing journey that she's been on the last couple of years. And I can testify that this woman has really done the work, and it shines through everything that she does and that she says. I said this a couple episodes ago, but you can really tell when somebody's deeply embodied and comfortable in their own skin, and you definitely get that with Samantha. And best of all, it's a little bit contagious, so stay close. And I think my favorite part of this episode, not that it's my favorite thing that happened, but the part of this episode that I find really inspiring and thought leadery is the recent end of her romantic partnership with her business partner as well, and how they have navigated it and remained life partners and friends. I think a lot of times when we break up with somebody, we have that cold turkey and we grieve and we miss them a lot. And watching them navigate moving away from being a romantic partnership and turning it into a friendship where they still communicate all of the time and they still work together, they keep the love even though the romance piece has been removed, is really just like not something we've ever seen before in our lives. And I think that it's something brave, it's something bold, and who knows what the future holds for the two of them. But a lot of the times when we are in partnerships for a long time, we become enmeshed, we become one, we lose ourselves. And sometimes stepping back away is kind of the only way. Life is that windy journey of losing yourself, finding yourself. And sometimes that means making decisions that the world doesn't quite understand. Samantha says it much more beautifully than I do, so I will allow her to do so in the episode. Anyway, before we jump in, I just wanted to share something that I'm going to be working on tonight into tomorrow and how I work through fear. Many of you know that I've been teaching yoga for the past 2 years sporadically, mostly just learning and sinking my teeth into it and occasionally teaching. And when I do teach, I put a lot into every class. It's not, you know, something I jump out of bed and can lead a class. I put a lot of thought into it. And normally I prep for like a week before I do a class because I want it to be good, because I want it to make sense. And because, yeah, that's just what my process looks like right now. That being said, I do want to teach more. And I know everybody gives the advice that the only way to teach more and become a better teacher is to do it more often. Nonetheless, fear gets in my way, excuses get in my way. But tomorrow, somebody asked me to teach a private group. And so with less than 24 hours notice, I'm going to be teaching, which doesn't make me fearful. It's a little bit thrilling. And it comes from this place of knowing I can do it. I just need the push. And when she asked me to do it, at first I came up with a couple of reasons no. And then I just said yes. And you know, I'm a big advocate for saying no when things are wrong and not people pleasing, not saying yes, and then always figuring it out. There is such a place for no, but there's also such a place for yes. And I am saying yes to it. So that is what I'm going to be doing tomorrow morning. And I'm so excited. I'll also share that, like, teaching yoga, I think I've said this before, is the least financially profitable thing that I can do for my time per hour, no matter how you slice it. But hopefully you can hear the enjoyment and or the excitement in my voice when I talk about it. And that's why it's important to follow the heart, not the money, because the money won't give you the joy and the smile, where oftentimes the things that aren't the most lucrative do. So figuring out that balance, aren't we all? Okay, I just wanted to share that with you in case you need to say yes to something that you're fearful of and know that you are capable of. Sending lots and lots of love, 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 and light, and I will see you back here next week. Hello, Samantha. I'm so excited to be with you right here, right now on this perfect day.
Oh my God, I'm so happy to be here with you.
I think that the timing of us sitting down is actually perfect in the sense that, first of all, we were supposed to record a couple months ago. And since then, so much has happened for us together and also you personally. Even just recently, you did like a May recap post on your Instagram, and it was like super inspiring about you really leaning into, I'm going to butcher the language, but you really leaning into the here and the now and stepping away from the shoulds and shouldn'ts.
Yeah.
And each picture that you posted or video of you dancing, like, I felt the freedom and the embodiment of that sentiment. And it was awesome.
Thank you.
We got to spend May together. Samantha came on the meet treat.
We did.
So how was your meet treat experience? Let's just start there.
It was amazing. Like, it felt like this great adventure that I got to share with all of these people that I am still in touch with, you know? And I think all the unexpected turns just really allowed us to connect as a group on this level that I don't know if we would have if that hadn't happened, you know, with the volcano. I absolutely loved Guatemala. I loved the opportunity to go there. Just a beautiful country and culture. So it was so wonderful to go somewhere new. And then to be able to do all of these things that I love, you know, like the somatic breath work and the fire circle that we did and the sound bath. Like, I loved witnessing how you curated this experience. And even with all the changes, like, it was really beautiful. And I loved connecting to all of these women. And especially for me, just in this season, like, I feel like I'm a new version of myself. And so to be this version of me with all these new people felt really good.
Yeah, I felt very inspired witnessing your me-treat journey. Like, even though it was just a couple of days together, I got to really witness you show up many times as a leader, which is very natural to you, but also something you've been practicing as a business owner and business creator, business builder, you know, more than just business owner. You built your company from the ground up. And then there was also this very introspective for lack of a better word, I'm going to say, like, I think it comes with a negative connotation, but I don't mean it in that way. Selfish, self-centered. There were times that you retreated back and you focused on, like, just yourself. Again, I don't think those words have a negative charge to them because of how we view self here. But anytime you pulled back, like, it was beautiful because I think it also gave other, it was a very like group dynamic the way it ended up playing out. But you were like, I need my time to self, and you'd take it, and then you'd come back and you kind of had this like look in your eye of like deep transformation, like recharging.
Yeah, I think especially in group settings, I've really learned that I need to have that time for myself. And there were times when I would just go like lay down in my room by myself because I just like need that space. And for me to have that autonomy now of like, I know what I need and I'm going to go do it is really refreshing for me. I'm like really proud of myself because in the past, like if I'd gone on the meet treat like 5 years ago, like I would have been like there for everything, like wanting to just, I don't know, make the most out of all the connections and all the things, or just trying to get something out of it instead of just allowing me to have an experience and take care of myself.
I think you kind of just said that beautifully. And it seems like you've really surrendered to life in many ways. And as a result, you've kind of become a vehicle for things to move through you. Like I picture you like a straw and things are going like out the bottom and coming out the top, or coming in the top and out the bottom. Like the energy of your body feels very open vesseled. I know that's weird, but that's just how I'm picturing you, like a pool noodle, you know?
But I feel like a pool noodle.
But more eco-conscious and not made of foam, you know?
Yeah, totally.
But my question is, I guess, just, you know, for anybody that's like, ooh, that sounds freeing, liberating, and fun. Everybody wants to play with the pool noodle. Were you always so fluid?
No. I've had to work through a lot and put a lot of practice into place in my life to be able to allow life to move through me, and for me to even, you know, feel my feelings and let my feelings move through my body. That's taken a lot of work because that is not the way I was raised and not my kind of status quo. Even like 3.5 years ago is kind of when my journey started, I guess. So no, I was very controlling just about everything, my environments around me, the work, you know, all my self-worth was in everything outside of myself. And so I was very constricted. It's like I knew it, but really it was my burnout in 2019, me like crashing and burning, like my body actually not functioning correctly. That was my wake-up call. And so that's really what kind of started this journey for me. Of listening, allowing,
which
it's so easy to say this now, but I would like, you know, even a year ago, I feel like I wouldn't even have had that language. It really has taken a lot of practice and continues to. I mean, oof.
Okay. So this conversation, I feel like, could veer in many directions, and I want it to go in two distinct directions that I want to explore that I'm curious about. But because you're kind of talking about burnout, I think it makes the most sense to really focus on the metaphorical baby that you've birthed into the world a bunch of years ago. And yeah, your company, really. Let's talk a little bit about your company, when you started it, how you started it, why you started it, and the evolution of it over the last, I think, decade.
Okay. So I met my partner, former life partner, current friend and business partner, Ian, in 2009. And we just had this instant, beautiful connection. And one of the things that really brought us together was this love of healthy foods. And he has a lot of dietary restrictions and can't do a lot of irritants like gluten, dairy, soy, and lots of other things. And so he had created this coconut cookie recipe out of a need for himself. And he taught me how to make it one night. And we were both like, wow, these are really good. And this is 2009. This is before the gluten-free section at Whole Foods that's, you know, two aisles long. And so there just weren't options like that. A lot of the gluten-free foods back then had a lot of fillers and just extra ingredients in them, and they didn't taste good. And so he taught me this recipe, and we were like, wow, this is great. And then we decided to get a home processor's license and start making this recipe in his mom's home kitchen. And her nickname is Emmy. So that's where Emmy's comes from. The brand is Emmy's Organics. And we had no business experience. Ian had done some work with food companies. So he'd done some, like, not really manufacturing, but he had worked in some larger scale restaurants. And he worked at Organic Avenue in New York City back in the day.
Throwback.
And so he had a little bit of food experience, but nothing around the business. And so we got the home processor's license and just started going kind of door to door, became Ithaca Farmers Market vendors. We did that for 3 years and just kind of started this business because we wanted to. There was no strategy, no business plan, no money that we put into it. Like, Ian had some savings that we used to buy bulk ingredients at our local co-op, and that's how we started. And then, you know, over the years, we just kept going and started going door to door in other areas. And we started going door to door in New York City, which the timing was really wonderful because people were starting to look for more gluten-free products. That was not strategic on our part. It was just very lucky, I think. But especially, you know, our goal is always to create products that have very minimal ingredient lists, that all of which you can pronounce. And I think that's what really set us apart at that time. You know, now there's a lot of amazing products on the market that have really, you know, simple ingredients, but we were quite early, I think, and it was awesome, you know? And so we had other jobs when we first started. We were really just doing it for fun. And then things just really started to take off. And then we just kept kind of learning and growing, making mistakes. We always manufactured our products in-house, and we still do today, which is very rare in our industry. And yeah, we started working with like small distributors, and then we kind of figured out how to get into one region of Whole Foods Market. And after that, it was like, how do we get into another? And, you know, we started learning about brokers. Eventually, we started going to trade shows, which I think was really great, even though they're very expensive to be at. It just allows you to connect with other people doing what you're doing and with people like you, which is how me and Lisa met. And I was actually reflecting on this yesterday, just in those early days. It was actually quite lonely starting a business in my early 20s, because I had really just graduated from college. And, you know, just most of my friends were doing other things. And so there weren't a lot of people for me to like share this experience with. Luckily, I had Ian. And I know, I mean, there's a lot of solopreneurs out there who start businesses, and that I really just feel for how that loneliness that's there, you know. Ian and I have this ability to just make things happen. We both do in different ways, but we were just so committed and we just friggin' did it. It's so wild. I think being young and like not knowing anything about the industry was helpful because we were so naive. You know, we just kind of went for it, asked big favors, asked people for advice that maybe we shouldn't have asked for advice. And I mean, that's the very abridged version, but eventually we did grow the company to become a nationwide brand. And that's, you know, what we've always wanted.
I mean, it's just incredible because when we met, the quick story of us is I was an early adopter, let's call it, to quote unquote healthy foods. I wouldn't call it that, but, you know, I was shopping in Whole Foods before, you know, it was Whole Foods. I was drinking kombucha before, you know, I was into the raw stuff. I know what Organic Ave was.
Yep.
You know, I was in that early time when it wasn't, it was just transitioning out of being like just crunchy to consume these foods, and people were starting to see, oh, I actually feel better when I eat this way. Anyway, long story short, I needed an internship, and I think Instagram had just come out, and I don't even think there were DMs, and I know it wasn't Instagram. I went to your website and I emailed like, I would love to be an intern for you. Had no idea who I was emailing, but I knew this cookie well because it was one of the few options available at Whole Foods. And like you said, it stood out and it tasted good. Anyway, they declined me the internship, which was fine. But in those early years, I was still going to the trade shows, and it was before the word influencer existed and nobody really knew about this. But I had worked for another healthy food company at that show the year before. So I decided to attend the year after. And when I saw Samantha, I ran up to say hi and introduced myself. And you hugged me in such a way that can be felt. Like, you have such a healing presence. I remember Evan being like, wow, who's that woman, girl? It was a long time ago. So he probably said, girl, she's okay. So nice. Okay, Evan. But you know, when people hug you and they leave like an imprint on your body, you know, energetically, it was like that. And as the years turned on, we stayed in touch. And I even visited your Ithaca factory, which was so cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that everybody should have obviously more connection to their food.
Yeah.
Even your packaged food. Like, we should see the, not necessarily how it's made, but the people that are making it, and not necessarily you and Ian, which are wonderful, but the actual people in your facility. And what stood out obviously to me and Abby, who I came with, was it was like a family in there. You know, it wasn't like you're the boss and they're the workers. Like, you could tell they were happy employees. Mm. And that the business, which was not just doing well, was healthy inside, not toxic. And probably, if you know, I know you had big goals, like you said, going national. Was profits always the main goal for you? Or how did you stay in line with your heart while also being profitable and ultimately selling a portion, I believe, of your business?
Started talking about this incident, drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation.
I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating.
And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How did you stay in line with your heart while also being profitable and ultimately selling a portion, I believe, of your business?
That's such a good question. And I'd say that obviously going through the motions over the years, that wasn't my terminology, you know, staying connected to my heart. But I really believe that we did. And I think that Well, one, being in Ithaca and not around a lot of the industry and other food companies really just allowed us to do things our own way. And I really believe that both me and Ian, we really followed our instincts along the way with this business. And a lot of that in the beginning, without having a lot of business experience, we just thought, oh, you grow a business by making more money than you spend, right? Which is called profitability. But most businesses in our industry are trying to grow as fast as possible. So they're getting a lot of funding in the beginning, very early, and just trying to grow really fast. And so they're not necessarily thinking about profitability. They just want to grow. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think very experienced entrepreneurs who've done this before, like that is a, there's no one way to grow a business. So that, just saying that. But for us, that was just the way that we knew to grow. And so that allowed us to not have to raise money early on because we did focus on profitability. And that really meant we had a healthy business. And when it was time for us to start purchasing equipment and building out a real facility, we ended up going to our local bank to do loans and lines of credit. And that is also quite alternative these days. And so that allowed us to not give away any of the company, you know, and we didn't for like 12 years. So that's what felt right to us. And so we did that. So that meant we were in control. And as far as staying connected to my heart again, we just, both me and Ian have personal values that we just brought into the business naturally. You know, we, when we started having like a staff, it was just a main goal, major goal of ours to become living wage certified. It was just like, that's what's fair. People need to be making a living wage at a minimum. It's not how we started, but we wanted to get there as soon as possible. And so we did. We had this one woman, her name was Da, and she came to work for us through a youth employment service program. And she was a refugee from Burma, which is now called Myanmar. And she had been working at nights at Subway, I think, before coming to work for us. And she was such an enthusiastic, amazing worker. We were just amazed by this woman. And anytime, she said, anytime you guys have an opening, I know someone, I have a neighbor, I have a cousin. And from that experience, we were able to tap into this beautiful refugee community that exists in Ithaca that we didn't know about. So this was not like we started a business to hire refugees, but in just like listening and being with our people, we were able to find these amazing, this amazing community. And so over the years, our entire manufacturing staff eventually became Burmese refugees. And because of that, you know, we wanted to make everything very accessible for them. And so any printed materials we would pay to have translated into their dialect. When we had meetings, we would ask if someone could be, we actually paid someone to be a translator at our meetings. And we still do this today. All the signage in our facility has both English and Karen, which is their dialect. And we became just a part of their community. We went to weddings, we've been to funerals, we've seen babies born. It just became a really special part of our story. And it was just like listening and doing what was right. It didn't feel like, oh, we need to like be a heart-centered organization. You know, it just, we just kind of did what felt right. And I think we made a lot of great decisions doing that. Not to say we haven't made tons of mistakes, but I think a lot of good things came from that.
That's a really beautiful, natural, for lack of a better word, unperformative story. You know, nobody, it wasn't something that I had even, I'm not sure if I had learned this previously, but I had forgotten it's not blasted on all of your materials, although it's fine, you know, if it is, because it might inspire somebody else to do so. But just learning like the natural progression of how your business operates is just really wonderful. And I think a testament to who you and Ian both are. I think what is really interesting is like a new business with this strategy, right? Probably wouldn't work in today's market. I would probably go the same route as you, as somebody who's more interested in the product than the business side of it. But I think that you stand out because the strategy in place was not let's grow, grow, grow as fast as possible. Let's not slap gluten-free on here because that's what people like. Like it was like listening to the consumer But maybe the fact that like Ian was the key consumer that you wanted to help heal, like that kept you grounded. Because I personally feel very offended by products that like you can just tell are just using like trendy marketing language and sort of preying on people, like, you know, guilt-free cookies type of a thing. And it's fine to like use that language maybe in passing, but like when it becomes your cornerstone, it's like, but there's so much more to this cookie, right? Like, let's educate people on coconut. Let's educate people on chia seeds and like all these ingredients rather than just like eat this and, you know, just not really providing like the education. I'm so like offended by new companies that are clearly trying to make it big so fast. Yeah. And they don't have the heart in it. But anyway, you mentioned the word mistakes. And is there like one mistake that you would maybe share here of, or something that you would do differently in the early days?
I mean, yes. There's so many things I could go with right now. But we've, you know, like purchased equipment from a company that basically disappeared and like couldn't support us, and the machine just, we couldn't even use it. I'd say when you do have a staff of people, like I think it took us some time to really have our employee manual in place and processes, but you know, we learned just employees, I hate saying employees sometimes, team members, you know, they want to be taken care of. And so having, you know, some structure and policies in place is really supportive for, you know, creating a safe environment. And so, you know, we did it, but it was just felt kind of informal in the beginning. But we did eventually, you know, start having a manual and having meetings and going over it and having people sign things. And so, yes, there's been so many mistakes, though. I am like, I don't even know where to begin.
Well, I'm sure there's also many sleepless nights. Like I called this a baby in the beginning, right?
Yeah. And goes growth spurts. You know, you don't have the people, you know, for a long time, it was like me, Ian, and two other people, you know, in the beginning. And so if we had a big order that we weren't expecting, it's like we were there all night. We didn't have our staff stay all night, but me and Ian, mm-hmm. we would. There's so many like hilarious nights of us just making products like late into the night. Or like coming home and packet, you know, labeling bags or whatever.
Before the blast off, which in my mind is like Starbucks. Like once I saw you in Starbucks, I was that like, was. Okay, that was major, right?
Yeah.
Once I saw you in Starbucks, I was like, okay, there's no going down from Starbucks because you have gotten so many eyes on your product. That brand visibility that you were talking about is just so key. Prior to that moment, even in the early, early days or maybe leading up, were there people in your lives, friends or family that were not encouraging you to continue because they didn't understand what you were doing?
I'd say luckily no one was encouraging us not to continue, but a lot of people didn't understand what we were doing.
Well, so that can be hard, right?
Yeah. I mean, especially, yeah. I remember my dad and my stepmom, they like thought I was nuts, you know, to start a business with a guy that we didn't even tap into this part. Like I met Ian and then like 4 months later, we started his business together. So that alone, you know, is wild. And yeah, it was very new, the type of product, the type of industry, you know, that just no one knew about, including us. And so luckily, I'd say, well, Ian's mom has always been such a cheerleader for us. And she's just like that as a parent, which is really cool to see. And so I'd say his family in general is like super supportive and would come and help us paint new facilities or like put flooring down and come help package when we were really tight, you know. So we did have some very supportive family, and then definitely people who are like, what are you doing?
It's, it can be hard when people don't get it and you're constantly explaining and they're not like, wow, such a good idea, like everybody wants this, right? Like being in that early stage, it's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
So it's cool that you persevered and continued with it even though, you know, the world wasn't necessarily understanding it at the time. I think it just speaks to anything that you want to create, like, and not having all yeses and still moving forward with it if you're feeling, you know, that passion and fire from within.
Yes.
So fast forward about 8 years and you're experiencing feelings of burnout. So First of all, what was that feeling like for you? Because you said it was physical.
Something started not feeling right in my body. And I wouldn't have been able to even say that language at the time. But I guess the biggest symptom for me with my burnout, and I think it shows up differently for everyone, is that I had chronic insomnia for many, many months where I was up in the middle of the night for 3 to 4 hours every night. And it became unbearable. It wasn't just like you don't have a good bedtime routine. You know, I was doing all the things. I was like trying to meditate, read before bed, all the things. And nothing was working. And I also was in a very busy season of life. It wasn't just about business. And I did not burn myself out because I'm an entrepreneur. I burned myself out because I didn't know how to listen to my body. And I was putting all of my self-worth outside of myself. And so I said yes to every social function. And I was also traveling a lot for work. I remember there's one summer where I had two or three girlfriends getting married. So there was like bachelorette parties. There were, you know, events up the wazoo. Summer in Ithaca in general is like just, you know, summer on the East Coast, everyone's just like so alive. And I did not know how to say no to things because I was afraid of, you know, I was afraid of saying no, being a disappointment to someone else, not continuing some kind of connection with a friendship, also visiting family. Like all of my weekends were just full. And then there's also, you know, catching up on laundry and grocery shopping, and, you know, all of life. I did not have any downtime in my life. And if I did, maybe it was like watching TV, but I was maybe looking at emails at the same time. And I was like, I'm sitting, you know, I didn't know. And so there was just this breaking point where I just knew something was wrong. And there were times when I would cry to Ian saying, I don't know how to listen to myself. So I knew I wasn't listening. I just had no idea how to listen. And it was really sad because like I was aware of this issue. I just didn't know what to do. And at that time, I was listening to the To Be Magnetic podcast. A friend had maybe introduced me to that company. And so I had been listening, and the founder, Lacey Phillips, she had talked about adrenal fatigue and burnout on one of her episodes. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't even know what adrenal fatigue was. And so I eventually went to a naturopath in Ithaca, a friend of mine, and she gave me, we did a Dutch test, which is like, yeah, you're familiar, but it's basically like a hormone test where you spit and pee on these different tabs throughout the day. And it kind of measures your hormone levels. And that basically confirmed that I had some hormonal issues. And I think probably in the scheme of things, they were not so bad, but it was affecting me a lot. So through that podcast, I had heard about the Beam protocol and how that can support you in hormonal deficiencies, hormonal issues. And so
this is like your big topic. Everyone listen up, because you are the bean girl.
Me at the meat treat, I'm just like telling everyone to eat beans.
No, but also like I've been following your, you know, personal page for years. And I remember when the bean content started coming out, because, you know, you do perk out up. It's obviously it's like beans are healthy, but you don't hear people glamorizing the bean the way you glamorize the bean. So let's go. Let's hear about this protocol.
Let's glamorize it. Yeah, I know. I was not passionate about beans before doing the bean protocol either. And I guess I've always been a believer of healing through food, right? It's what got me into this industry. It's why I wanted to start Emmys. Like, there needs to be better indulgent treats that don't have all the junk in them, right? We need to be eating foods that we can pronounce all of the ingredients of, you know? So it makes sense that that's where what I wanted to try first. And that was really my mindset. I was like, I'm just going to try it. And if it doesn't work, then I'll look at maybe taking different supplements or, you know, getting another opinion. And so I worked with Unique Hammond, who basically coaches people through the Bean protocol for 1 month. She kind of got me set up, and then I was able to text or email, you know, if I had questions. And Ian also did it at the same time because he has, you know, his own health stuff. And so the Bean protocol can help everyone, but it can be, it's tailored, you know, you do things maybe slightly different based on your symptoms. And so this was at the beginning of 2020. When all this happened. And so we were doing the Beam protocol, you know, for 3 months, you know, before the pandemic hit, but it ended up being very supportive in that sense, you know, because we weren't going out to eat, not that we went out to eat that much anyway, but we were like, just stayed home and ate a lot of beans.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for me, that also meant cutting out caffeine, all sugar, including fruit. So that included Emmy's products for many months, which was really sad. Gluten, dairy, I was basically eating beans, lean protein, vegetables, and healthy fats, like as snacks. And that's pretty much it. And I think maybe after like 3 months of doing it, I think the sleep, I think even a month, I noticed a shift. But I noticed that every 3 months, I felt like a major shift in my body. And it was the best that I'd ever felt. Not only the best, but I'd say the most connected to myself and how my body was actually feeling. And now, because of my burnout and me not knowing that I didn't know how to listen to myself, I also at the beginning of 2020 started, or maybe at the end of 2019, I started doing somatic therapy. And I also joined To Be Magnetic and started doing those programs online. And so those three things kind of were my path to healing. And I actually still do all three of those things today. And just what happened during that time was just, it was transformative. It wasn't just with my body and kind of understanding just how a healthy hormonal system felt in my body, but it was also doing a lot of unpacking from my childhood trauma, learning how to listen to the sensations in my body. I was so disconnected from my body. I was so in my head. Most of us are. So that's normal. Or I don't know what normal is, but, and so basically I feel like that was my kind of entry point into having a connection with myself. And those kind of three avenues is what really supported me.
Right. When you say that, like, you're still doing it, I just spent time with you and you're not just like shoveling beans all day. So right. What is the role of beans now?
Right.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is the role of beans now? Just because I think that, like, to the layperson also, it might come off as restrictive. And yes. I know you and your relationship to food and being with you and preparing food for you. I know I felt like you're on the strict protocol. So,
and I will say I did have some hesitation doing the bean protocol because I do have a history of disordered eating. In college is when it really started for me. And I was worried. And even when I was in my like raw food days, I like still was, you know, maybe, you know, they call it orthorexia, like kind of obsessive about the healthiness of everything. So I've actually done a lot of work to kind of unpack that. And with the bean protocol, I was a little bit worried, but I also had I was so tired of being tired.
Tired. You weren't sleeping.
I wasn't sleeping. I was running on nothing. I was running on adrenaline. And actually, when I looked at the foods that I was eating at that time, I would wake up, I would go to the gym. This is pre everything. Go to the gym, do very hard exercise, like high impact workouts. I'd come home, shower. I'd make a smoothie with lots of protein powder and like lots of fruits. And I wouldn't even have it until I got to the office. So it's like, I'm just not feeding myself and I'm having a lot of sweet things. Oh, and I'd have coffee on an empty stomach. And just now knowing what I know, oh my God, I was just running on nothing. I was running on adrenaline and causing so much stress in my body. Like just my nervous system was so shot. So as far as the restrictive now, right. So I went through the healing phase of the bean protocol, which for me was about 9 months to a year. I was like pretty strict about it. And it was during the pandemic. And so it was kind of easy because I just like wasn't going out or traveling a lot. But then I started incorporating, even at 9 months, like playing with little things. How does this feel in my body? You know, like, oh, if I have like a decaf latte, what is that? Or, ooh, like if I have some like fruit salad or, you know, and I now have such a strong sense of what my body's craving and when I want to have it. And so the role beans play now in my life is I usually eat beans for breakfast every single morning. Like there's just nothing that satisfies me the way that beans and eggs and vegetables do. It's just like, and I'm a person, a creature of habit. Like when I find something, I stick to it. And if I can have beans in any other meal throughout the day, great. But I'm not hyper focused on that. I really, really listen to what my body wants. And honestly, what my body wants is simple foods. Like that's mm-hmm. just what I crave and what I want. But I don't let that stop me from going out to a restaurant and having a beautiful experience there, traveling. Like I just don't, I travel with psyllium husks. So I do, you know, make sure to have my fiber, but I really love the balance that I've found now. And especially actually around food, I love the analogy of making a decision from a full or an empty place, you know, like, I guess, in April, I got this intuitive hit to do some kind of cleanse. And I was really kind of on myself about it because I was like, cleanses, like, that's not healthy. Like, I don't know. Are you trying to lose weight? Like, what is? And so I kind of held it for like 3 weeks and I just kept thinking about it. And it did, it just kept coming up. And I realized that at that time, I had just had a lot of emotional stuff in my body. Like I had just, and my digestion wasn't right. My armpits smelled weird. Like something wasn't right in my body. And so I had a friend who kind of recommended doing a Khichdi cleanse, which is like an Ayurvedic, and I hate even using the word cleanse, but I basically ate Khichdi for my meals for 4 days or something. And I realized it was coming from this full place. I wasn't trying to change anything about my body or restrict myself. I just really had this knowing that like I just needed to like move things through in a different way.
I think that's really brave and intelligent to have that conversation with self. And also like I get that like cleanse, like diet culture has now like X that word, right? But like yeah. I'm kind of with you where like I think almost like too far. It's like we can use these words. And there's definitely times in my life too where like it's really hard to mentally get to your brain and your mind and your soul when the insides feel the opposite of cleanse, when they feel backed up and all of that.
Yeah.
So I definitely understand the role of that. And it wasn't also like you were just doing that, like doing it in combination with the somatic therapy, which is incredibly powerful. And the I have magnetic stuff. Like you were really hitting everything at one time. So while this is going on back in 2019 and you're healing your burnout, what's going on with Emmys?
So it was a very stressful time for Emmys, just with the pandemic and, you know, figuring out how we could continue to operate while keeping everyone safe. And, you know, there was just a lot of stress coming from everyone, our team, and, you know, me and Ian were really trying to navigate all of that. And it was really, really hard. It was really stressful. But at the same time, you know, we were able to keep our business alive, which was not the case for a lot of businesses. And so we feel so grateful that we were able to kind of get through that really hard time. And I think it was around then when, you know, even before the pandemic, we had started talking about raising money. And I think because we realized that eventually we liked the idea of selling the business. You know, when we started, that was not our goal. We didn't even know we were doing. And so it was many years in when, you know, we would talk to investors and they're like, what do you want? What are your goals? You know, and we were like, we don't know. We just love growing this business and what we've created. But then there was a point when we were like, eventually I think we would, because we're so young, it would be so cool to explore other things at some point. And so we started looking at raising money to get, you know, a minority investment. And that was kind of pre-pandemic and then through the pandemic. And I will say, me doing my own work at that time, I started getting really clear that I was ready to take some of the weight off of my shoulders. I think just understanding, like, you know, again, I didn't burn myself out because I was a business owner. It was because of, you know, me not listening to myself. But at the same time, I put a lot of pressure on myself around the business always, you know, because it's so important to me. And I just, the idea of just having a little weight taken off just felt right for me. I think eventually in my like journaling, even I could see at first it was a minority investment. And then I remember being like, I actually would really love it if it was a majority or a full acquisition. Like if it was done in a way that would maintain our values, that was always, we weren't going to move forward with anything unless that was happening. And so we ended up doing this investor pitch online. It's normally an event that happens in person. And I don't know if we would have done it if it was in person, because neither of us, you know, me or Ian, really like to speak in front of people like that. And so we did this virtual investor pitch. And that's when we first connected with the company that fully eventually acquired us. At first, we were talking about investment. It was like a year, almost a year until anything happened. But that's when we started talking to them and kind of learning about their company and, you know, what being a part of it would be like.
It's pretty awesome, because when we were in Guatemala, these huge trucks were going by with the name of the company and you're like, oh, that's the company that acquired us. And I think, you know, at first thought, when you think big company, small business, like you're not, you know, you're going to lose a lot of what you came for. But we've had so many conversations where that's not the case. Like you have, obviously, I know that you wouldn't have sold to a big company if they were going to cause you to bend in places you didn't want to.
Right.
But can you speak to the fact that like you still get to make important decisions alongside them?
Yeah. I mean, I think they really wanted me and Ian to stay and to really like lead the company. And so that was really cool. We didn't want manufacturing to change at all because we've created something really special there. And so that was really important to us. We wanted to maintain our living wage status, which we were. And we also wanted to remain a certified B Corp, which is something I didn't talk about, but that's just another way that we kind of like measure our like how we're using business as a force for good. And so those were the conversations that we had with them. You know, we were just asking all these questions. And oh, and the other thing is that everyone that we met from the company, we liked. And I just kept being like, is this for real? Like, I genuinely like all these people and they seem like good people. And that
it feels too good to be true,
yeah,
vibes.
It felt too good to be true. Like, is this really, like, do we really like everyone? So there were just a lot of things that honestly felt right. And now that I know how to listen to my body and my instincts, like, it just felt like a full body yes. And so, you know, obviously there were a lot of many months of conversations going back on information, financial, you know, like it's a very intensive process, which by the way, we went through and didn't tell anyone that we were going. I think we told friends and family only tight close friends and family, maybe like a week before we closed the deal, because it was like, we didn't want people checking in on us about this. It felt very private and we wanted to make sure we're making the right decisions, just like with our own, like just us. And it was actually a really special time, like just navigating that together. And also we had a CEO also that lived on the West Coast. Another part of the story, but yeah, so it was like the three of us kind of navigating this.
I think that's incredibly wise. I just want to say for you and any of our listeners, when going through something big, like not telling everybody, because that invites questions, advice, or just energy that can get tangled with yours. And it was a sacred step forward for you and Ian to make sure that the choice was really staying yours and any outside noise could have infiltrated, and you kept it, you know, tight, which is really, again, wise. And I think a symptom of healing yourself and feeling so connected to self. I always say, like, listening to your body becomes easy, because once you are in touch with that, like everything else, you don't hear it because you're so loud, right?
Yeah. Or I've also learned, like, if I'm not sure, to wait, you know, and that didn't happen as much with like this deal or anything, but just there are times when I'm like, I'm not sure how I feel. So I'm like, I'm going to pause, you know, or I'm going to come back to that, because anyway, that's just for me. That's how I've navigated that. So it just happened in this way that actually felt just really right. And I never thought that selling a business could feel this right. Never, ever. Because I've had many friends in the industry sell their companies and or have just a lot of investors and have like weird relationships and maybe not, you know, feel good about what happened. But we really feel like this was the right decision for us at that time.
And this catapulted a lot of change into your life. You were living in Ithaca with Ian. You now are an LA resident. And for anybody who doesn't know Samantha or hasn't followed, this might come as a little tearjerker at first, but you know, romantic partner, business partner, Ian, that we've heard about for, you know, all throughout this episode and the business that you built, you are no longer romantic partners.
Right.
And I thought I could just read your post if that's okay. And then we could talk it through, because this, I think, I mean, you're making huge change in the world, but if people could approach relationships, whether it's divorce with kids or just partners without kids like you did, I think, it's just so refreshing. So Samantha posted a picture of her and Ian and wrote, "No love lost, love transformed. Ian and I are moving into this next chapter of life as close friends and business partners. I think when a couple ends their romantic partnership, the normal assumption is that something went wrong. But for me and Ian, everything has gone right. What I love about us is that we've always done things our own way. We met together 5 months later, started a business. After 3 months later, we committed to doing Bikram yoga every morning at 6 a.m. We shared one car, one bank account, one workplace, never tired of each other. We're still not tired of each other. We met and dove into life as true partners in every sense of the word. Although this feels sudden, we have been navigating the shift in our relationship since January 2022. And the journey of getting here has been deep, thoughtful, courageous, beautiful, transformative, and don't get me wrong, hella sad and confusing at times. But throughout this journey, we never stopped loving and supporting each other. I've learned so much about myself, about relationships, about love, and about grief. For the last 5 months, we've been living separately and really loving how it feels. We are different people now, and it's been fun to explore who we are as individuals." There's a little bit more to that, but how cool is that to remain loving and connected to each other and then also explore individuality, especially because you were together for how many years?
14.
14 years starting this business. Like, it's very easy to get lost in each other.
Mm-hmm.
So anything you want to add to that wasn't like perfectly said in that post?
I mean, I don't even know what I could add, but yeah, this experience has been transformative, and to be able to do it with Ian as my partner, like, and he still is my partner, you know, it's really been amazing, you know, and I think my biggest fear, I remember in the beginning, you know, it's like, I had this intuitive hit in January of 2022 that something wasn't right. And it fucked me up. I'm not going to lie, for months. Like, it scared the hell out of me, because I had never thought about life without him. And it took many months, but I realized that my biggest fear was losing him in my life. And I'm tearing up just thinking about this, because it's so real. Like, this person has just been my family, you know, for such a long time. And I realized we had just gone through so many months of kind of confusing, like I was having these really confusing feelings and like, you know, we were trying to navigate all of them, but he hadn't gone anywhere. He didn't go anywhere. And there was this moment, I remember, I think it was the summer of 2022. And I was like, he's not going anywhere. And that allowed for a huge shift in just us approaching what was going to be best for us moving forward, because and there was just that safety in knowing that I wasn't going to lose him in my life. And that was huge. And so, yeah, just knowing that has been really special, because I don't want to lose him in my life or his family. You know, they're my family.
I love that you have challenged, tackled, and won the notion that breaking up means no relationship again. And also with that, unspokenly comes, like, you know, I think people think of, like, jealousy comes up, like, we can't stay friends because we'd be jealous, or, you know, just too much history. And I get that there are certain things that are confusing, especially as new partners may get involved and so forth. I don't minimize that. But to really get to the bottom of the fear, right? Like, him not being into your life, and allows you to make such a bold move that I don't know what your long-term life will be, maybe with him. I don't know where you guys stand with that, but the importance of individuality, especially when you've done everything together, is so cool that you could reclaim that at any age, right? Like, you're in your 30s and you're reclaiming living on your own now. Like, and it's, I assume that that's hard, because when you are so enmeshed with somebody, like, you have different roles. So now you have to learn the tasks that he has been doing for you for 14 years and vice versa.
Yeah. In my, like, first months living on my own, I really came up against some edges, not as much around tasks, but more just, I didn't know how to live life just for me. You know, like, I was still, even though we had separated, I just in the back of my head was like, well, I'm going to wait to make any major decisions, because, like, maybe something's going to shift with me and Ian, you know, or like, I'm going to wait and see. And we also hired a really wonderful relationship coach that supported us through this. So I just want to put that out there too. And we feel very privileged that we were able to do that. And it was very supportive for us, because even though we've always had wonderful communication and have a lot of skills in that sense, this was very new territory. And so it was cool, because I was sharing a lot of this with our coach, and she was like, you don't know how to live, like, unattached. It was like, this was my anxious attachment coming up and really being able to see it. And I wasn't even able to buy, like, a box of butter, like, that had 4 sticks of butter. Like, when I first got here, I was like, I don't want to make any kind of commitment to LA. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, you know? And so I really had to, like, work through that and kind of unpack things as I went. And, you know, I have this sense of trust, because it's just like, if Ian and I are meant to be together in that capacity in the future, like, we'll find each other again, you know? And so I really trust all of this. And he's doing so great too. And, like, really, like, loving life on his own. He's kind of like a nomad at heart. And
he's so cool.
Solo adventure man. So yeah, he's been, like, taking, like, salsa lessons. He's been out in LA also, but he's actually leaving today to make his way back to the East Coast.
Do you think that'll be hard?
You know, I thought it would be, but I think that, I mean, I'm going to see him in, like, a month and a half when I go back to the East Coast. And, you know, we do spend time with each other, but not, like, every single week or anything. So I think that it's going to be okay.
Is it hard to, like, not do the normal, like, semi-romantic things that you used to do, like holding hands? Or can you still do that because you're just friends? And we've just put a romantic, like, spin on that as a culture.
Yeah. I can't say we've been holding hands. It's been very natural. I don't really know. You know, obviously we love and support each other. We talk to each other on the phone, like, things that we're dealing with. We also are not legally divorced. So we, like, you know, we have our home in Ithaca and we're, like, navigating just, like, our life things, which honestly is really fun for us. We love working on things together. You know, like, that's just, like,
what
that's
you do.
What we do.
What you've always done. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, no, I'd say that hasn't been hard. It's been just a very natural shift, but we still very much love and support each other.
Well, I really feel so inspired by it, and just think the gravity of what you've done and showcasing it, which, like, you're, you know, somewhat of a personal person, not everything's out there, really is going to transform and make people think. It's so thought-provoking to really think about, like, why we're with our partners and can we still have them in our lives if we don't, you know, and just really challenging that paradigm. And mostly I'm just so happy for you guys because it's flowing from such a peaceful place. So my last question is just like, what now? I think, you know, it became very obvious on the meet treat, although you were there for self, that you are showing up as a leader in many ways and want to help, I think, other people navigate entrepreneurship, right? And from a place of the heart. So what is your current work outside of still doing your Emmy stuff?
I'm kind of exploring that, I guess, at this point. I've always been a very natural life and business coach, I would say, over the years, especially as I've like dove into various healing modalities. I've done lots of workshops. I've been a part of online platforms. I've like learned, I'm someone that just like really dives into things. And so I am doing a little bit of that on the side right now. So I have some business coaching clients and I have a life coaching client. And I actually am going to explore something with someone who was on the meet treat where I'm going to support her in creating like a devotional daily practice and just kind of like listening to what her needs are and kind of setting her, like giving her a prescription. Cause I think the hardest thing about starting any kind of connection with self, spiritual journey, like whatever you want to call it, is just those early habits, you know, and like really starting them and sticking to them. And I think that everyone is very different. And so I'm really curious and interested in how I can support people in creating those practices for themselves. With the client that I have, I've really supported her in nervous system support and creating different habits for herself. So I think that there's a lot that I am going to do here. I just don't fully have it figured out yet. And so it's one of those things that I'm really allowing to emerge. And just as I get excited, like I literally just had this idea yesterday. And then I reached out to this person from the meet treat and she was like, yes, I'm in. I'm like, can we just do this as a, can you be my guinea pig?
I think that also speaks to your entrepreneurial nature of trying things, right? Like it's scary to try things, but you just, you start it, right? Like it's
right. Give it a awesome. Go. And so, yeah, I've gotten a lot of support from online communities, it kind of in the spiritual realm or healing realm. And so I love the idea of creating something for myself in that sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is yet. So I feel like I'm very early in this stage, but I'm really excited for what's to come because I'm really listening and it's coming from a very true place.
Yeah, from a full place too. Like I could feel it flowing out very effortlessly. Mm-hmm. Well, that's awesome. And like I said earlier, like when you hugged me 10 years ago, it felt like an imprint. You have a very natural healing sense and like a very old grandmotherly soul. You know what I mean? Like there's, and I think that while doing that, like, I think that's what we need more in quote unquote life coaches, right? When we think about life coaches, I think about people often who are using very like headstrong modalities and mentalities and prescriptions like that. But what we need is like soft, nurturing life coaches that will allow us to find ourselves through nervous system re-regulation and all of which like you kind of very naturally embody. So I'm very excited to see where this side work kind of takes you.
Thank you.
Because you're a magical being. So if anybody is like, okay, I'm feeling very called to Samantha because of her entrepreneurial nature or how she's navigating her relationship or just the burnout, I mean, all of that might be a good person to reach out to. I'm going to put your information below, your Instagram and your website so people can follow along your personal and professional journey. Thank you so much for sharing your heart and your soul with us.
Thank you. I love being with you.
I love being with you too. This was so much fun. I hope to see you in real life soon too.
Yes, totally.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.